What's good, everybody, and welcome to Body Bag Podcast. I'm Chris Thomas, and with me, as always, Broke Grider Dave.
How we doing, everybody?
This is supposed to be the second season of season six, so it's good. It's a complicated season, but it's broken down into sub seasons. And I wanted a section in this season to be us going back and giving second chances to things that maybe we were a little harsh on, or something we may have made up our minds about, but it's been, you know, time has passed. So if you're watching and listening to this, obviously, you know, my big thing was The Lighthouse.
Yeah.
I know Dave was definitely dreading it, but I had been saying for, like, I don't know how many seasons. I don't, like, we complain about it, but I want to like it.
Yeah.
Is what I've been saying. Now, has the passage of time helped? I watched it for the first time in, like, 4 years on my own.
Yeah.
Because I watched it in a group last time, but we'll get to that. We'll see if time heals all wounds, but we have homework.
Yep. I definitely think with our homework and movie reviewing, this is an episode of really out there movies.
Because I gave you In the Mouth of Madness, right?
Yeah, and you got Hell House 3.
Yeah.
Which is a movie that really takes a swing.
Hell House?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I have a funny story about that, but why don't we start off with In the Mouth of Madness? That was my gift to you.
In the Mouth of Madness, which stars Sam Neill from Jurassic Park and Event Horizon, so that's a plus.
Actually, this might be the season of Sam Neill.
Yeah. Directed by John Carpenter.
Yep.
It's a strange movie.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird movie, and I think I told you that going into it.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of those movies, kind of, because you start at the end, and then you go through an unreliable narrative of Sam Neill's character about what happened and how he ended up where he's at.
Yeah, it's like, is this just the ramblings of a crazy person?
Yeah, because you start the movie with Sam Neill getting grabbed up and stuffed into a padded cell. And basically kicked the guy out of the balls and was like, I'm sorry about your balls. It's just a lucky shot.
Oh, dude, I have to rewatch that movie. I don't remember that line.
But Sam Neill in this movie, his name is John Trent. And John Trent is a freelance investigator for insurance companies. Kind of help him find people that are, you know, committing insurance fraud and everything.
Yeah, he tries to find scammers and people taking advantage. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, he's finishing up this case with his boss. The case has no merit on the story. They just finish it. This guy was hiding jewelry.
Yeah.
They leave, and then they get attacked with this guy with the axe. And
that woke you up. Just out of nowhere, an insane guy with an axe just crashes through the window.
Yeah. And then he's like, have you read Sutter Kane? And wouldn't you know it, Trent's next case is to locate Sutter Kane.
Hey, what a coincidence.
Yeah.
Oh, before we go further, I have to ask you, what did you think about that intro song?
I mean, it was pretty good.
I actually downloaded that In the Mouth of Madness theme song. I thought it was pretty kick-ass.
I mean, it's a John Carpenter movie, so of course
it's going to sound good.
The sound's going to be great, yeah.
Yeah, it was really rocking. All right, continue. Sorry.
Yeah, basically, Sutter Kane is a horror author who kind of has some people who read his books to go insane.
Yeah, that's the big thing with his stuff is you read it and can you just go crazy.
Yeah, but his books are selling like hotcakes. Sam Neill's like, I really don't believe it. It's probably like mass hysteria or something.
Right.
And it's Arcane Publishing who publishes books.
You couldn't do that. Like, Sutter Kane couldn't exist like nowadays because so many people will be doing it just to get like views on TikTok. Yeah. I'm going to read the next Sutter Kane on TikTok.
Yeah. And they're basically like, he's disappeared and we don't know where he's at. So we need to cash in the insurance on them. And Trent's like, nah, I'm going to find him.
Yeah.
So he finds out he might be in a city called Hobbs End.
Wait, so did they say, since he's an insurance fraud investigator, why is it that, what's his case that, like, him, he's not like a private eye, so did they say why this?
So basically, like, a publishing company like that it's going to have like an insurance claim out on like Sutter Kane.
In case
something happens to him.
They want to be like, find our guy. Okay. Yeah. Okay, I got you. That makes sense. Okay, cool.
So instead of the insurance company paying out, John Trent goes and looks for him. Yeah, and this is a town that's not on any maps. And so he decides he's going to drive up there and find him. And he's joined by Linda Stiles, one of the ladies from the publishing company.
Right.
And so they're driving, kind of lost, and they're driving through the night. Next thing you know, while Trent's sleeping in the car, Linda Stiles driving, you get this bizarre scene of kid driving by right by on a bike. 2 seconds later, an old man riding by on the same exact bike.
This is where the movie starts just getting trippy.
Yeah, and she's like, what? And it's kind of like this bike's on like a loop, and they keep driving past it, and she eventually hits the guy, wakes him up, and then he was fine, and he's like, they won't let me leave. And then he rides off, and they keep driving forward.
That's weird, really trippy,
like, bunch of flashing lights.
A lot of fog machines.
Yeah, and then next thing you know, she's driving out on a bridge in the middle of the day. And John Trent's character's like, wow, I must have really slept. And they are in the town of Hobbs End, which, looking around the city, they realize a lot of things in the city are from Stutter Kane's books.
Mm-hmm. Like a town right out of one of his books.
Yeah, so they check into a hotel and then they start searching for him. And I think they're at a church where kind of have a bunch of, you know, the people living in the city out in front with guns, mm-hmm. telling Stutter Kane to let their boy go. And so you kind of have that standoff. And I believe he does let the boy go. I don't really know why he was holding him.
Just remembering what Sutter Kane looked like coming out with a cloak and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, so they
meanwhile, enter. Just throughout the whole thing, too, just like weird like shit's going on in the background.
Yeah, so they enter the church and confront Sutter Kane, where he exposes them to his final novel, In the Mouth of Madness.
He said the title.
Yeah, which, you know, Linda reads, causes her to go mad, and she starts becoming like a monster, growing out tentacles and everything. So this sounds basically like crazy, and
it's just crazy and it is very out there in terms of what's going on, because it does rely very heavily on just weird shit happening and random stuff happening.
Yeah, and it kind of takes a step of what really is reality.
Yeah.
Is what this book say in reality, or what we feel everyday reality?
That's why it's kind of hard to kind of put into words a little bit, because it's like a horrific version of Alice in Wonderland, kind of like just crazy shit happening, but not as bizarre. But it's strange. It's like a fever dream.
So Stutter Kane finally gives the manuscript of his final book to Trent, and he's like kind of rips himself apart to expose the door for him to go out to the real world.
Mm-hmm. Because they're like in another like dimension or something, aren't they?
Yeah, it's kind of like isn't a real city. It's like a city in a different dimension.
I know it sounds weird explaining this movie, but the movie is this strange. It's like it jumps around like this. He opens up the door and Sam Neill runs out.
Yeah, so Sam Neill, once he gets back, he destroys the manuscript, and then he goes back to Arcane Publishing and describes what happened, and then basically, people there are like, yeah, that girl never existed.
She like, was what? Never there.
Yeah. And he already delivered the manuscript a month ago. It's already been on sale. Yeah, with you. And then Trent kind of murders someone with an axe, getting him sent to an asylum.
Just kind of murders someone with an axe.
Yeah. And then you cut back to where he is in the asylum telling us to the doctor.
Hey, train.
Yeah. Well, the train is back.
Yeah. And, you know, we usually record at 7 and we end up getting the train. We're recording at 9 right now, or close to 9 right now, and the train still, it knew.
Yeah.
That train's our biggest supporter.
Yeah, so, and then Trent wakes the following day to find the asylum abandoned. He departs as the raid announced the world has been overrun with monstrous creatures, including mutating humans, that outbreaks of suicide, mass murder, commonplace. And then Trent goes to see In the Mouth of Madness film, where he discovers that he is the main character.
And that's that picture that you see all the time on like memes and stuff of Sam Neill looking up at a movie screen.
Yeah. So the scene where he is insisting to Linda, like, this is reality. Yeah. That's it.
That's it. It just ends on a crazy, I guess he's just nuts kind of vibe. So yeah, I knew that when I was giving that to you, I was like, all right, I gave it to you because that has kind of a cult following online, especially on Instagram. People like that movie. So I was like, it's just a movie to be familiar with.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I wouldn't say I'd add into like a rotation of movies I'm going to watch, but it was still a pretty good movie.
That's probably John Carpenter at his most like unrestrained, maybe.
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm just going to be as weird. The thing had creatures and everything, but this movie is just like weird.
Yeah. John Carpenter just going all out. Yeah.
Yeah. You want to go ahead and give it a breakdown?
All right. So for technicals, the effects were good, but kind of dated.
Yeah. I agree with that.
They don't really hold up all that well. So we'll give it a 6. And then for story, it's kind of like a Lovecraft inspired.
Kind of hard to
crazy
grade
out there story, yeah.
It's kind of hard to grade a movie story like this when the story itself is like supposed to be nonsensical.
Yeah, but just because it's so out there and original, I would give it an 8.
Wow, that's high.
Yeah, and then enjoyment, like I said, it's a pretty good watch. I'd probably give it a 6.
I should have kept that one in my back pocket for. No, this was your homework. So you actually had a good homework one then?
Yeah.
Oh, fine.
So an overall of 20 out of 30.
Yeah, all is not lost.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a pretty good choice.
I'm glad you had fun. Well, as I've mentioned in a couple episodes before, you got me into Hell House, and I pretty much took to it like a duck to water.
Yeah.
Or whatever that phrase is. I don't know. Like a something to water. But not you can't have them all be winners.
Yeah, 3 is kind of where it goes off the rails.
So, all right. So, Hell House 3. First off, I'm going to go ahead and say this. It was a treat because I had watched... We're a little bit behind schedule in recording, but I watched this... I guess it's been about 2 months, 2 or 3 months, since I was first introduced to Hell House.
Mm-hmm.
And I went back and I got all my old notes. So, it's funny to see all my old notes that I had put at the time and rewatching it. Like, yeah. You know, years later, people are still lining up to go to the Abaddon and get killed for some reason.
Yeah.
You would think, with all of the information out there about this place, including the two previous things that happened, you had a mass ritual suicide, and then 20 years later, you had the thing that went down in the first Abaddon, then you had the sequel where more deaths happened, but you know what? We're going to keep it here. We're not going to demolish the place.
Yeah.
So, years later, we have basically... I'm going to say a more charismatic Alex who's putting on a new show at the Abaddon. It's, I think, a year or two later after the events in the second one.
I believe so, yeah.
And this guy actually has money, first off. Alex was, like, tight for money. This dude, he wants to do this haunted walkthrough, but with, like, a Shakespearean kind of twist to it. Faust, I think it was.
Yeah.
So, you know, I will say this about this movie. If you haven't seen any of the, like, the Hell House 1 or 2, don't worry. This movie is made up, like, 50% of recycled footage from that movie. Because, again, we're following a woman who wants to do a documentary on this guy, Russell, who bought the Abaddon to put on
Russell
his show.
Russell Wynn, eccentric billionaire.
Eccentric billionaire entrepreneur, you know. At first, people are probably thinking, all right, billionaire entrepreneur, what the fuck are you doing? Why are you doing is slumming over here? But
he likes to put on plays.
He likes to put on plays. I will say this. They must have forgotten that this one is known pretty much by people who like Hell House as the big misstep. And even in the writing, because I guess the writers forgot that the Abaddon is located in New York because they said, I can't wait to get the hell back to New York.
Well, I think they were talking about New York City.
Well, he didn't say New York City. He just said, I can't wait to get back to New York.
Because they usually did this play on, like, Broadway. And now they're doing it at the Abaddon.
Well, I was just like, well, you are in New York. Because he didn't say New York City. I had to rewind it. I was just like, did you guys really forget you're in New York right now? Like, But I don't know. Maybe it was a misspell. I don't know. It caught me when he said that. But anyway, I digress. That's not even important. All the typical things happen. You know, they're sprucing the place up, and now they have and now in addition to the clowns that are around, they have these like cloaked looking individuals that kind of resemble they're a white version of the black cloak cult people. It kind of looks like they're now kind of littered throughout the house. You see, I think the reason why the first Hell House works out is because a lot of the scares were subtle.
Yeah.
Either subtle or very quiet. Not so much this movie. Throughout from start to end, it's just doing nothing but like static references to previous like scenes that we've seen. Like, oh, you remember this shot? Remember this is where like this and this happened? He's like, yeah, we saw the first two movies. Why you don't have to keep cutting back, you know, we know. And less scares, the scares are more jumpy now. And the story gets way more convoluted. Just looking through all of these. All right, so Russell is acting very secretive about... Well, he's doing this documentary, but certain things will happen and that you can tell that he has a secret. He's friends with this priest man who, whenever they're together, you can tell that they're keeping some hush-hush. He's getting, like, a package from, like, some unknown person. He looks inside, and then he puts it in a safe. It's like, all right, dude. And... if I'm not mistaken, the story with Russell is, I don't know how many years prior he was in a car accident.
I think it was supposed to be like 5, so it kind of correlates with when the group set up the haunted house with the original Abaddon.
Right, and like you can see on his face, he definitely got injured because he has a big scar on his face. And I think he like legally died for like a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Like because of the crash. So the typical stuff happens. Some of the cast members... like one night, one of the cast members, they're in a bonfire, they're drinking, and of course, oh, and I gotta say, the acting in this one was definitely a downgrade too.
But I do love how like the castmates, there's most of them are like, oh, it's bullshit, and then you have the one guy who's like, fucking love the documentary.
Yeah,
so excited to be here.
I love being here. Now I'm trying to think between the second one and the third one, which I kind of get the two mixed up a little bit, but. Like the first one, our big thing was Alex. The second one, our big host was we were following around that journalist. And then this third one, we're following around another documentarian. I'd say at this point, like the documentarian, this one's just, I don't know, my least favorite of the people who were following.
Yeah.
Not saying she's particularly bad, just not that interesting. But it's about this halfway point where I'm just realizing, man, like they linger on a lot of people talking and... the attempts to sound like natural is just very forced to me. I don't know. It bugged me. What did you think?
I mean, it's been a while since I watched this one. It didn't bother me that much because when I turn on something like a found footage, especially like the third one in a franchise like this,
it's not going to be the best acted.
I don't have a high bar for acting or dialogue.
All right. So we later learn out that Russell, he had been keeping a secret from everybody, and the big secret was that he was liquidating all of his assets.
Yeah.
All of his assets, and he was giving all of the money to charity, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And the crew finds out about this after Vanessa pretty much leaks the story, which she'd immediately be fired and off the premises if I told you that in confidence and you immediately leak that.
Right? What are you doing?
Yeah, like, you're here as our guest here.
Yeah.
I don't understand that either, because you would think as a documentarian, you would want you still have the rest of your story that you have to finish, the grand opening of this thing. Wait until after that, get all that footage, and then leak the story, so you have everything you need. What makes you think he's going to let you stay around? I mean, he does, but there you go. So, the ending, to me, is where it starts getting a little weird, and I went on Reddit and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are saying this is where it kind of gets weird, because so of course show gets put on, and what happens? Same thing that happened in the first one. Yeah. Cult leaders, everybody dies, and we get but except for in this one, we get more like shots of actual like ritual members killing people.
Yeah, them coming out of the portal of hell.
Yeah, coming out of the... because if you're into Hell House, you know the Abaddon is pretty much at this point, it is a portal to hell. Because Tully killed himself in a ritualistic satanic thing along with his followers. Their whole thing is that they want to open up a portal to hell, get souls to come in and out of it, yada yada. And so in the end, you have all these killings, it turns out that Russell knows Tully, and I guess they alluded that Russell's an angel.
Yeah, that Russell actually died, and Angel just inhabited his body.
Came back to Earth, because they said ever since the car crash, he was like changed pretty much, and
yeah,
because like, he died, and I guess we need to see. At this point, you're like, you know, it was kind of nice when it was just a haunted house story. Like, why are we having to involve
the angels? Yeah, but now we got this angel closing this portal to hell. Yeah.
Angel closing this portal to hell. Is this really necessary, guys? Yeah. I mean, we don't need this big angels versus demons army thing. It was perfectly fine as a satan. Even if they didn't say that, like, the Satan was, but it just could be a satanic cult that just happens to be haunting this place.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so that's pretty much where. Well, ending is basically you see. I think this is a post credit scene, or it's the ending. But you see the original cast members from the first Hell House wake up inside the Abaddon Hotel, but it's like
you're
light.
Skipping like the kind of like the actual ending is.
Oh, sorry.
So Russell closes a portal.
Yeah,
and then everyone that died on that night wakes up outside alive.
Oh, yeah, that's an important part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, people teleported outside. Yeah, so Russell does close it up. And but did he, like, close it up and, like, seemingly sacrifice himself to do so?
Basically, yeah.
Well, his mortal form. I mean, it's an angel, so he'll be fine.
Yeah.
And
so portal's closed. Everyone's awake outside.
Everyone's awake outside.
And then you got the Dozen Ghosts of the original Hell House crew.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't leave.
They can't leave. They wake up. They're in the Abaddon, but it's like light, so it looks like it's like limbo.
Yeah.
They're like in limbo, neither heaven or hell, but they just can't leave the Abaddon.
Yeah.
And one of them, I forget which one, says, I'm going to the bar. I was like, hey, you know what? If this is your eternity, might as well.
Yeah.
But hey, I will say, in terms of a fate, could have been worse.
Yeah.
Could have been worse. You could have been like tortured in hell by the satanic cult leaders. At least you have a little company. Yeah. You got a full bar, but you don't have a good movie, unfortunately. You like how I kind of segued into that? Yeah, I couldn't get behind it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was watching it. I was more interested in it than I was in a lot of other movies.
Yeah.
You know, I'm invested in this whole Hell House story.
Franchise, yeah.
But this one was not it. Like, what are some things that you've heard about people say when it comes to the third one?
I mean, I haven't heard a lot. I feel like it's the one that gets talked about the least, probably for a reason. It's probably the worst movie in the franchise, and it's not even like close.
Yeah, it's not close, and it's not close, and it's just weird. It's just it's like now you're involving angels, and it's like just. If you watch the first one and then you watch the third one side by side, you go, whoa.
Took a hard left turn somewhere.
Took a hard left somewhere. where is this series going?
Yeah. All right. So what are you scoring it?
All right. So the technicals has been pretty much consistent throughout, but I docked it one point just because they kept having to do like flashbacks to the original, like way too many. Like every time they walked into a new room, they had to be like, here's a shot of the next one. And I don't know, if you were gonna have flashbacks, that I would have preferred it not to be that way. I didn't know if I was gonna put in that in story or technicals, but I'm gonna put it in technical. I'm giving it a 5. Because I mean, it's still the same found footage. It's still competent as a found footage.
Yeah, I mean, they're all directed by the same guy, so
yeah. Although the third one definitely seems like it was directed by somebody else. Story. This was a weak story to me. I'm giving this a 3. The story sucked to me.
Okay.
No arguments
there. Yeah.
Yeah. The story sucked. I'm sitting here trying to be nice to it, but I'm like, just cause it's like my new franchise now, but yeah, I couldn't get behind, like, take out the angels versus demons thing. You don't have to be so. And if we're here watching Hell House 3, you can already assume that we saw the first two.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to show us references to the first two. We've been here. We know this place. I don't think you're going to have many people just jumping into 3 cold. In fact, I would love somebody to just go into three cold just because they heard, oh, well, I hear Hell House is a pretty cool series. And then three is like the first one they watch it, like, geez, all right. Like, all right, it's all right. But I mean,
there's not many franchises where you could just jump into three and it makes sense. Yeah. Maybe Friday the 13th is the only one.
Or an anthology of some kind.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Enjoyment, I'm going to say four. Story sucked, but I still was watching it because I wanted it to, you know, be good. I mean, still one or two parts. I was like, oh, what's that behind? I mean, it's too fast paced, but, and that spoils some of the slower scenes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say four. Was debating 4.5, but I'm going to stick it at a solid 4.
Okay. So that's a 12 out of 30.
Yeah, not great. It's definitely one of my lower rated, like, movies. No.
You should be excited to know your next movie, Hell House Origins, the Carmichael Manor.
Oh, shock.
Yeah. They actually kind of brought this thing back on tracks.
Carmichael Manor. And I'm just going to go ahead and pretend right now that I didn't watch all of it already. I'm going to go ahead and pretend right now that I didn't already watch Carmichael Manor a couple of times. Spoiler alert, yes. I will say that, but I'll give my full breakdown when we review whatever Dave is going to be having us review, but we'll figure that out because we still got Lighthouse to do.
Yeah.
But, homework. We have to assign each other.
You still have to assign me homework.
Oh, damn. All right. I had a list. Okay, here's a list here. Oh, I have to erase that one because you're going to be doing that one for... Oh, here's one. You're going to get Maniac.
Maniac?
But the Elijah Wood version.
So the remake.
The remake of Maniac.
Okay.
I'd be interested to see what you... I was... that might have been the first time I saw, like, Elijah Wood, like, and I was like... I'd only known him from, like, either funny stuff or Lord of the Rings, and I was like, oh, this movie's pretty hard left. But, okay. So, okay. Yeah, you get Maniac.
All
right. Nice slasher for you.
Sweet.
But now to the time of the hour here, we have to do The Lighthouse. Now, you had told me before, like, you made me watch Lighthouse again, so I'm going to go ahead and assume that this was not fun homework for you.
This is, I'm like you, like, I want to like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it shot very well, but it's boring. And I find very little enjoyment in watching this movie. Like, instead of actually enjoying watching a movie, I feel like it's a task.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh.
Now, when we first started, when I said, all right, Lighthouse, I'm sure you were like, ugh. You knew it was going to be between that or Hereditary. It would have been Hereditary or something like Midsommar, another A24 thing that's usually slow-paced. But did you go into it knowing... I'm probably not going to like it again? Or did you go, maybe some time has passed?
I mean, I wouldn't, like, maybe. Maybe there's is something's going to connect this time where I'm like, oh, okay.
I hopped into it going, I hope to God it's better because I'm making Dave watch it again. I'm sure by now people have watched The Lighthouse, but I mean, essentially, this movie is basically In the Mouth of Madness, but on the lighthouse, but on a lighthouse island. That's a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah.
You have Robert Pattinson and Willem Dafoe on a, I think it's for 2 weeks or 4 weeks, something like that, have to man a lighthouse.
Yeah.
Willem Dafoe is batshit crazy, and Robert Pattinson, they're both named Tom, so I'm just going to, I think they're both named Tom, so I'm just going to call them by their actors' names. So Robert, he just wants to do his time and leave, and damn it, Willem just won't let him do his time and leave. He constantly condescending to him, calling him boy, telling him he has to, yelling at him and making him drink weird water. And which you would say that there's more like that there's more that goes on in this movie. And there is in terms of allegory, but for the most part, it's pretty much you go to sleep, you wake up, something weird happens and you go back to bed. They wake up, drink, they fight, they go back to bed. But the one big thing is, Willem Dafoe says, you do not tend the lighthouse. That's my duty. I tend the lighthouse. You swab the decks and all that. And he has a weird pirate accent. So the big question of the movie you're pretty much is like, all right, what the fuck's going on with this lighthouse? Like, what's going on up there? And Pattinson's miserable. He keeps getting into it with this bird, this seagull that has it in for him. It just keeps fucking with him the entire time he's on this island. And he, like, tries to shoo him away. And Willem Dafoe's like, oh, I saw you fighting with that bird. He's like, it's a bird. So, and he slaps him in the face, says, don't be messing with a bird. It's bad luck. It's the souls of like men lost at sea. It's bad luck to be picking fights or to kill a seabird. Cool. Movie progresses. Willem Dafoe just drinks, and Willem Dafoe's just being nasty. Like, he farts and, like, spits all the time. And the dude is weird because you're like, you don't know how he is on it any other day. And one day he could be, like, fine. And then the next day he's just, like, bitching at you for some reason. And threatening you. And threatening to dock your pay.
He's a pendulum.
Yeah.
Swinging back and forth. Yeah.
And it looks like the only way that you can be a lighthouse keeper is if you have a shit ton of booze or something. That's the only way to cope, apparently. Like, if you run out of that, drink some turpentine.
The day before our apprentice was supposed to get picked up and taken from the lighthouse,
he kills a bird.
Yeah, and then a storm hits.
I mean, at this point, a man can only take so much. Yeah. That bird keeps fucking with him. And Willem Dafoe keeps messing with him.
Yeah.
What else he's... And the only thing he could do, his only bit of solace is that, like... probably once a day, he has a little mermaid statue who goes and rubs one out in the corner somewhere. That's his only...
basically, yeah.
And he keeps having weird dreams about mermaids, too.
Yeah. He's basically losing his shit, slowly. But yeah, the storm hits, so like, he can't be picked up, so...
I guess you're stuck with Willem.
And as time goes on, the storm keeps raging, and they're still stuck there. While they're searching for rations, they find a big crate full of alcohol.
Yay.
So they just get fucked up.
Pattinson used to not drink.
Yeah.
He drank at the very last day, which is so funny because it was his last day. And, well, of course, on his last day is when Willem decides that he wants to act like a decent person.
Right.
This is if you're an alcoholic, this isn't a good thing because they bond over their mutual, like, they start drinking and then they start, like, laughing and they both loosen up. They unclench, as it were, around each other. And Pattinson's like, well, this is right before the storm hit, but like Pattinson was like still asking about the lighthouse thing and he's not getting any answers. And it was, so it seems like booze, that's the only thing you can do. So they find a crate of it.
Yeah. And they booze up and
get weird.
Yeah. No, this movie really takes a left turn and starts getting really weird.
Just, I mean, it's been, at this point, the movie's been slow. A24 movies go slow, 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 and then immediately just like, okay, weird shit's happening. Usually in the last third, like it just, a bunch of weird stuff happens, but it takes like, this is why it's a mixed bag with A24, because it just takes a while to get there.
Yeah.
And I think at one point they run out of booze and they start drinking turpentine.
Yeah, they start mixing turpentine and honey.
Turpentine and honey. It's like they'll be arguing one minute, rustling around, and then like laughing, like they're just fucking drunk. Like,
And
Pattinson's having hallucinations. He'd been having dreams about mermaids and drowning, and he had one dream where he went up to the lighthouse to go see like what was up there, and he just sees like tentacles and slime coming down from it.
Yeah,
he's already been losing his shit, but now he's booze fueled.
And then he finds William Dafoe's journal about him.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, William Dafoe called him a drunk, worthless employee who shouldn't be paid.
Yeah, he had been threatening to dock his wages. Like, Robert Pattinson had done everything that this dude asked.
Yeah.
And he did it, like, stuff that you would, like, punch somebody in the face for, like, talking to you, like, getting in your face of. And oh, yeah, that would set anybody off.
Yeah. So they end up tussling.
Yeah, a little wrestle.
Yeah, and I think that's where he ends up taking the key from him.
Oh, Pattinson?
Yeah, takes the key from Dafoe for the lighthouse.
Right, yeah.
After he thinks he's killed him.
He didn't kill him yet. But so, just, at this point, it's just it's kind of like a, fuck you, I want to see what's in the lighthouse. Even if it's just a light bulb, you keep it, you've been keeping it from me. It's like, what's it called? Lord of the Flies. Crazy on this island. And... so he does get the key, and Willem's not dead at this point. He makes Willem get on all fours, right? And like, and crawl outside. And Willem Dafoe is like spouting off some like Greek mythology stuff, maybe like some vultures feast on your gizzards or something like that.
Yeah.
Story of Prometheus, if you don't know.
Basically, yeah.
Which, you know. Yes, here's the symbology. Prometheus brought light and fire down from the gods and was punished for it. What's up in the lighthouse? It's a, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Willem, but he basically kills Willem, or does he make him dig his own grave, pretty much?
Yeah.
And buries him alive.
Yeah.
And so now Willem's dead. He goes up to the lighthouse. Guess what's in the lighthouse?
Wait. Well, he's not dead yet.
Oh, I thought it was after.
Robert Pet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, before he sets up, he has a smoke, and then he gets attacked again with an axe.
That's right.
Disarms him, murders him, and then he goes up to the lighthouse.
Then he goes up to the aisle. Yeah, I keep missing major things. Thank you for picking up my slack.
Yeah.
And
it's
guess
a weird movie, yeah.
Yeah, guess what's in the lighthouse? He finally opens it up and sees. Guess what's in it? Hell if I know. Because
a big fucking light.
A big light.
Basically, if you're looking at a light like this, it's going to throw off your vision and everything.
I'm guessing that it's supposed to be... Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he ends up basically... It's up tumbling back down the stairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm guessing that it's like when you're like supposedly if you see like the face of God, you like your mind can't handle it kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's probably like something like that where it's like, oh, it's so grandiose or whatever, like my brain can't. And then it ends with basically him naked out on a pile of rocks as seagulls peck at his gizzards. He's still alive. I mean, he's getting, and that's where it ends. And I tried. I really tried to like it, man. Yeah. I really did. I even caught it on a rainy, cloudy day. Perfect for watching it. I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't hang. I don't know. As I'm watching this, I'm like, but I like slow-paced movies. And I like Willem Dafoe. And Robert Pattinson is a very good actor.
Robert Eggers is...
Very talented.
I like The Witch. Yeah, I like The Witch.
I like The Witch, too.
I'm going to have to watch The Northman, because right now Robert Eggers is 1-for-2 with me.
Yeah.
Nosferatu.
Yeah, that's why I'm really looking forward to Nosferatu. Because
I know visually it's going to be stunning.
Yeah. Like, the visual, and you know me, I like black and white movies anyway.
Yeah.
And I know they're not your cup of tea, even like new, but I like the black and white filter. Something aesthetically, if it's done right, can add something to a movie. But, and I say that visually helped. It helped with the melancholy feel.
Yeah.
You just kind of feel hopeless watching it because it's like, which is a good thing because I think they wanted you to just feel like melancholy too while watching it. That's what Robert Pattinson's feeling. But I couldn't hang, man. It really did feel slow. It was one of those things where I kept checking the thing. And I was like, are you serious? It's only been 10 minutes. It feels like it's been 30.
Yeah. It's just one of those movies. Everyone's opinion of it's going to vary. Because there are some people who really think this is a great movie.
And to each their own, of course.
Yeah.
We knew enough when we were watching it already. We were like, that's why the 30-point scale exists. Because it's like, it's kind of hard to... Because it might not be our cup of tea, but we have to be like, well, objectively.
Yes.
So
I think it has like a...
It's definitely certified fresh.
Yeah, 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. But, you know...
I don't really
go by Rotten Tomatoes a lot because I disagree with them a lot.
Me too, but I do like just comparing our scores to theirs. We tend to be more generous with ours.
I think my scores are closer to like the audience scores that they put up.
Mine's kind of mixed. I've been on the side of some critics on certain things, and it's kind of a mixed bag. There is definitely a lot of like... Their favoritism in terms of like which reviews get like acknowledged and which reviews like get counted in like the census. But I don't know. But this one is one of those reasons why I say A24 is a mixed bag with me. Because like The Witch, like you said, and Witch was A24, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Same director, same company.
Time to read some rotten reviews.
Yeah, read some of those rotten reviews.
Hey, you got Keith Garlington from Keith in the Movie. And I really feel this one. Mm-hmm. I worked really hard to like this movie, overlooking my frustrations and pushing forward for something more than the beautiful black and white visuals, intensely committed performances, but I never found it.
That's about the best way. That's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah,
that person who put that?
Keith Garlington from Keith and the Moose.
Yeah, Keith probably is pretty much me all around. It's like what I'm watching, I know is good, but why am I not feeling it?
Yeah, and then we got Tessa Smith from Mama's Geeky. Too artsy, too far fetched, and by the time we get to any reveals, well, I just don't care anymore.
I don't know if I'd agree with that.
The only reason this gets a 1 out of 5 instead of a 0 is the acting.
I don't know about that. I think it has more going for it than that. like we said, it's far fetched. I mean, it's a weird tale. I mean, at this point, it's like A24. It's gonna have a weird premise anyway.
Carrie O'Shea, Warped Perspective. Atmospherically, it may be, but The Lighthouse is, in other key respects, very, very dull indeed.
I think that this could have been a 30-minute movie.
Yeah.
I think that this would have been a fantastic 30-minute movie. It's like one whole like episode slot or something, I think would have been pretty cool.
Then you got Sandra Hall from Sydney Morning Herald. American writer-director Robert Eggers excels at transporting you into the past and putting you under the skin of those you meet there. Persuading you to be glad that you came is another matter.
It's like, oh, that's kind of nice. Oh.
Yeah, because visually you do kind of get the, you do get transported in the world because of his camera work and the performances, but
I would say that with both movies I've seen of his, I feel like in The Witch, I felt like I was in the 1600s. And in this one, I was like, yeah, this definitely has the vibe of like back in the day.
I think this takes place in the 1800s or something,
I'd say like late 1800s, if anything, at the most early 19.
All right, so what are we scoring this?
Okay, so technicals is where it's going to excel.
Yeah.
I'd say it does exactly what I have to, you know, I'm giving it the high score of an 8 on visuals because it is visually good at what it's doing.
Yeah.
That's where it's going to get the highest marks for me.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm going to give it an 8.5 on technicals. I do think that's where Robert Eggers excels as a director.
Is in its visuals. And I said, but this did also have good acting, I will say. Yeah. It's just, you know, I just wasn't into it as all.
Yeah, two great actors putting on a clinic, great visuals, you know, the score was great. Then we get into the story.
I wouldn't even say that the story, because I have to separate the story and enjoyment for myself. Yeah. The story itself isn't necessarily bad.
It just makes sense. It's and I all get over that. The place, yeah.
I get that it's all over the place, and even the cliffhanger ending of, like, we never see what's in the light, I kind of already figured that was going to be the case when I was watching it.
Yeah.
That we would never find out. But as a story, I don't think it's as deep and great and fantastic as a lot of people say it is. I'd say maybe a 5.5 for story. Is okay.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4.5 for the story.
Okay. That makes up for the 0.5. We kind of even out on that since you gave, like, the technicals an extra 0.5.
Yeah. It's a nonsensical story for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the enjoyment.
This is where it's going to take the biggest dip.
For me, the worst thing a movie could be is boring.
I do know that. That is something I have figured out about you.
Yeah, and this movie is boring for very much of its runtime. And for that, I'm going to have to give it a 3.
You and me hit 3 at the same time. I'm going to give it 3 as well. I was dancing between 3 and 4, but if it's a kind of movie where I have to kind of keep checking the time. And I'm a guy who does love a slow movie. I mean, we watched, what was it, House of the Devil. That's a pretty slow movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was enjoying that. It's just you can't like them all, so 3 for me.
So, for you, you got a 16.5 out of 30. For me, you got a 16 out of 30.
So it's pretty much like
16.25 out of 30 for us.
It's like an above-average movie that we acknowledge is a very good visual and acted movie.
Very much like if you watch any of, like, Ari Aster movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like him, but he does really good with his camera work. You can tell he's a very skilled director, yeah.
Yeah, it's...
And I hate that I don't like this movie, but... Like,
yeah, it's but you know what? I think it's cool because it's not like, what, we're not gonna, like, crucify us for not liking anything, but it's like, it's one of those things where we gave it the whole point of the season. We gave it a second chance.
Yeah.
We thought, hey, look, you know, we did with Venom. We admitted, hey, Venom wasn't as bad. I mean, it's a bad movie, but not as bad as we remember. This one, it was like, it's not, we can't call it a bad movie. It's just, not for us.
But now I get to get some payback on you.
Yeah, I was more anxious where you were going to go with this one. Are you going to be man enough and try to do your own movie that you may have had second thoughts on? Or are you going to be like, Chris,
I know I didn't like this movie, but I remember when this movie came out, you said you watched about 10 minutes of it.
Oh, let me see if I can remember. I said that I watched 10 minutes of it and I couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Did you have this movie already in mind, or did me saying The Lighthouse kind of seal the deal on it?
Since you picked Lighthouse, I've had this movie in mind.
Okay, okay, what is it?
Skinamarink. Because it is a movie that a lot of people like, but for some reason, you and I fucking hated this movie.
I didn't watch more than 10 minutes of it because I was like, I felt like after 10 minutes, I was like, if this is all it's going to be, I think I get it.
It is all it's going
to
be.
Do but I have to watch all of it? Do I have to watch all of it?
You got to watch the full movie.
Wait, like, is there enough material to actually have a review on it?
Yes, there is. You got to watch the full movie, Chris.
Oh, God, man. That was boring. I was like, it's just, it's funny because I thought it was going, this pick is making me angry because I thought it was going to be one of those movies that I was going to be like, I thought it was so horrible that I was already complaining about it. This one, you just feel like, nah, it's just boring. I didn't care.
Yeah. I would have 10 minutes in, you're just done. You're just like, is this over yet?
Like, I would have preferred it if you said, yeah, we're going to re-review Hanukkah. Like, I would have preferred you said that because I would have been like, all right, well, at least stuff will be happening. I can try. At least I can look forward to that dude getting punching the person in the face.
That's all I could see in that movie. But yeah, no, we are doing Skinamarink.
God. All right. Like all right. You know what? I went into The Lighthouse.
Yeah, I went in open-minded. So
open-minded.
Because Skinamarink is another movie like Lighthouse where there's like 50% of people who swear by how great of a movie it is. And then people like us who are just like, no, it's boring. So
you know what? I'll even watch, you know. It's just me here in my place. I might wait until midnight, turn off all the lights. And put on Skinamarink and see if it freaks me out, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, see if the quiet or if I just end up falling asleep. Maybe it'll be good. I've been having a hard time sleeping. Like, maybe it'll be good ambient background noise and I just fall asleep.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I also screwed myself over with The Lighthouse because I ended up having to pay for it twice. Because I paid for it the first time, and then I needed a break, and then, like, stuff happened, and too much time passed, and I had to pay for it again so I could finish it.
Really? It's on Tubi.
No, I don't have Tubi. I got it all. I was on Prime.
Why don't... Tubi's free, man. You don't have to pay monthly for it.
I'm dumb.
Just download it, yeah.
You hear that, Shudder? You hear that, Shudder? Tubi's free.
Yeah, it's free. You just gotta get through the ads.
You hear that, Daddy Shudder? Maybe Mommy Tubi'll will have a home for us.
Yeah, that's the only reason I have Tubi is because it's free.
Yeah, so step
and
up,
all
Shudder.
The Hellraiser movies are on there, so you might want to download it before we do the Hellraiser rankings.
Yeah, take that, Shudder. I mean, I still am subscribed to you guys, but still. Yeah.
I'm still going to give you monthly.
I'm still going to give you my monthly, but you know. But that was The Lighthouse. Unfortunate, but whatever, we tried. And Skinamarink is up in the future. So damn it. I'm not looking forward to that.
All right, everyone, have a good week.
Peace. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.